Good morning and welcome to the Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella. And a couple of weeks ago, we had this comment by a political commentator, Hillary Rosen, regarding Ann Romney and the fact that, well, the fact, at least according to Hillary, said made the statement that Ann Romney had never worked a day in her life because she was a stay-at-home mom. And, of course, from that, you can imagine a firestorm erupted. And it actually, I think, stimulated a lot of conversation around working women, stay-at-home moms, and I think a lot of times people think of that as, at least for women, of course, I'm speaking from a male perspective, but oftentimes it seems like it comes down to a simple choice. Either I'm going to, you know, pursue my career, or for those women, you know, having children and having to make that kind of a decision, you know, do I pursue my career or, you know, I've decided I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. So it was almost like a binary thing. You either continue your career after, you know, following the children when the children come, or you work at, you decide to stay at home, raise your kids. And once they're raised, many women then plunge back into the workplace. Well, here to discuss this issue a little bit more and in greater detail is Catherine Solman. Catherine is the founder and managing partner of Nine Lives for Women. I love that title, too. A women's initiatives consultancy and multi-channel blog site. By the way, the website is www.9livesforwomen.com. Focus on 9 distinct stages of life and work. An inspirational speaker and experienced media resource on women's work issues, Catherine has been interviewed for the Today Show, NPR, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, Money Magazine, and many other national publications. She leads workshops that help employers attract, retain, and on- and off-ramp women, create alumni networks, enhance internal networking groups, and support women's leadership programs. Well, Kathy, welcome to the show. And what do you do in your spare time?
I raise 2 daughters.
Okay. Well, fantastic. So let's go ahead and just dive right into it. So I'm sure you're familiar with that whole firestorm that erupted with the comment that Hillary Rosen had made. And I'd like to kind of go beyond. Is it that simple? You know, women just have a choice. You either continue your career path or you decide to, you know, stay home, raise your kids, and then think about your career maybe 15, 20 years down the road.
It's probably that in the end that it's that choice of either going to work with children or staying home with your children. But the process of getting to that point is very difficult. And what I have found is that it's really not that black and white, that it's not a matter of working or not working. I think that most women are always kind of 1 foot in and 1 foot out of the workforce, whether they're working or not working, and trying to figure out the best situation for themselves and for their families.
So talk a little bit about the 9 Lives of Women. What inspired the idea, and what exactly does that mean, 9 Lives of Women?
Well, what I'm trying to get across is that from the college years to the retirement years, that women go through many different phases of work and life. And they dip in and out of the workforce. Sometimes they will, you know, work very hard at their career for 15 years, and then they'll decide that they want to do something more meaningful and perhaps not as corporate. There's the whole retirement issue of women who, you know, really don't ever want to retire. But there are what I have decided, there are about 9 distinct phases based on the work that I've done with women over the last decade, starting from college when they first start thinking about their careers and going as far as retirement and, as I said, oftentimes not wanting to retire.
So looking at the, I don't know if you'd want to think of it as the first life, but as I understand, it's the preparing for takeoff. What is that all about?
Well, that's the college years. That could be an undergrad or an MBA or a law student. And that's when you are laying the foundation for your career and thinking about the internships and the summer jobs that you should have. I'm trying to get across to young women that it's really important, even in the high school years, to have summer jobs and internships that are really resume worthy. And I get a lot of pushback on that because a lot of people say, you know, any job where you have responsibility and you're getting a paycheck is important. And I totally agree with that. But as a recruiter, I have seen the difference between a resume of a kid who has spent summers babysitting and the resume of someone else who's had a lot of great internships and jobs in New York or whatever. And so it's great to try to have a mixture, you know, at least, you know, if you're going to be a lifeguard for the summer, try to have at least a very small internship, even if it's for a couple of weeks, that you can put on your resume.
I find that fascinating because I know often, just as a favor to friends, I review their kids' resumes as they're getting ready to graduate. And I'm also an adjunct professor at three different universities. Two are at the graduate level, so most of my students are actually active, gainfully employed. But at the undergraduate level, in fact, I'm just wrapping up a semester at Fairfield University where many of them are just beginning to enter the workplace or beginning their job-seeking activities. And I look at the resumes, and you got to be very creative sometimes. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing the lifeguarding or the babysitting, but I know that because that does involve various skills. But I think what you're saying is not necessarily one or the other, but maybe combined. Don't be too narrow. And also, if you can have that professional kind of experience, for instance, a internship in New York City, you'd recommend something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of kids can't afford to have an internship that's unpaid for an entire summer. But what I'm saying is just try to incorporate that, even if it's a small part of your summer, because there are lots of employers that will do something on a very short-term basis.
Do you find, I'm not that familiar with some of the statistics, but it seems, at least a little bit that I've picked up on, that more young women are going to college, more young women are entering the workplace. And you know, so I'm of the generation where that was not as prevalent. Even going to college, I think today it's more or less an expectation. You know, growing up in the 60s, I don't know what the ratio was, but there were a lot of my peers that decided, you know, opted to not go to college. And then, I think of my parents' generation and I'm thinking of my mom, whose dad, my grandfather, said, well, when she brought up the idea of college, and this is she graduated back around 1947 or so from Norwalk High School. He said, well, what do you think? What are you talking about? You know, women, that's not what women do.
Right.
you get married and you have kids, which she did. And she had seven of us and she did a great job raising us. But that was it appears as though things have dramatically changed.
Well, I think that there are more women in the college classrooms now. There are more women getting the professional degrees now. There are enormous opportunities for women. I think that it's still a bad economy. It's still a very difficult environment to get a job. So anything that you can do to have a leg up, and it doesn't just matter that you have a Harvard degree, you know, versus a state school degree, that's not going to necessarily give you the job. It's really the practical experience that people are looking for. So anything that these young women can do to get that practical experience on their resumes is really important.
Excellent, excellent advice. In fact, as I think of my own 17-year-old daughter. Okay, so then walk us through some more of the nine lives of women. And we don't necessarily have to go in order if you want to pick and choose right now that you think would be of most interest.
Sure. Well, so the women, you know, get their first job, and then there's a period of time where they, what I call climbing the ladder, and that's and creating your professional brand. And basically, these are the years where most times women do not have children. They might be young and married, they're working to get those promotions and to advance themselves in their careers. Sometimes this phase continues when they do have children. A lot of women, by the time they have their second child, tend to opt out of the workforce, but there are plenty who stay in. And so this is a kind of a catch-all phase for anyone who is, you know, building their career over a long period of time. So in that phase, there are all kinds of issues of leadership development and negotiating raises and promotions and the competition among women and men and, you know, all the typical things that happen as you're building your career.
I love the idea of, you mentioned branding. How does one go about the, you know, branding themselves? And I'm assuming on a professional level, what are a few, you know, tips there?
Well, I think what happens is that people tend to think of themselves in very, very broad terms. Often you'll see on a resume that a woman is a marketing professional. And that's a great thing to say, but it's also extremely broad. And so what does it mean that you're a marketing professional? Mm-hmm. Marketing's a huge field. And so the idea is to really make it known among your colleagues what your specialties are, and the branding process is also kind of a promotional process where you try to find ways within the organization that you can help other departments or disciplines with your areas of expertise, and that's where you really become known as an expert and for your brand.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense. And you know, when I think of brand, I think of, you know, well, I don't want to promote any particular one, but I think, you know, Starbucks as an example, mm-hmm. It has meaning. You know, people, or the, you know, the BMW logo, when you see that, it has a message, really. It conveys a message, and generally it conveys a consistent message. And so I'm intrigued by that idea of a professional brand, which, I guess, similarly, you are conveying a consistent message about yourself, about who you are, and about what people can expect from you. And again, in a professional environment. How about another one of the nine lives?
Well, the life that many, many women are in now is pounding the pavement. Unfortunately,
men and women, I might add.
Yes, men and women. And that becomes a broad stage as well. That could be because you have been downsized and you've lost a job. That could be because you are interested in just changing your career or moving to a different company. That could be that you have been out of the workforce for a period of time and you want to get back in. But in all cases, it's all about selling your skills and that brand.
I have found that again, because especially of the unemployment situation, many people referred to me that have been, let's say, actively or gainfully employed for many years. And I'm thinking recently of a gentleman that I met with who was with this company for about 20 years. And I find that what happens is a crisis of confidence kind of creeps in. Do women experience the same thing? I want to be really careful here. I don't want to come across as being sexist. Because actually, another observation, having mostly when I think about my students, my graduate students, and I'm thinking of one in particular not too long ago that was up for a promotion, a young woman, in a department that was mostly, I'd say, 90%, you know, male. And she was younger, but she was tapped to become the lead. You know, it was going to be a great promotion. And she came to me for advice because she felt a little bit inhibited, intimidated for all those, her youth, the fact that she was a female and also in this male-dominated environment. And what it kind of boiled down to as we engaged in conversation was, I asked her, do you have the experience, the requisite skills, the knowledge? Yes, 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 right down the checklist. And it turns out we got to the confidence issue. And that was really the bottom line. And so here's where I want to be really careful. I think in my experience, men tend to come across as very confident when maybe deep down, you know, we're not. women, again, I want to be careful not to generalize, but in this particular case, as an example, actually is very, very capable and confident on the inside, but did not necessarily exude that confidence, or didn't believe in her own confidence, if that makes any kind of sense. Any thoughts on that, and especially as it relates to those who find themselves now pounding the pavement and, you know, dealing with this crisis of confidence? Do women have a bigger challenge, or is it as men, or lesser of a challenge?
I think that it's a little bit of a holdover from maybe the 40s and 50s, where women were supposed to be, you know, much more reticent. And I think that women tend to have a harder time tooting their own horn or really speaking out about what their strengths and skills are. I have a really funny story about a coach that I know who was coaching very high-level women, and she was trying to get a woman who was a CEO of three companies to write her summary statement, the 50 words about, you know, what she's done and what she's good at, basically. And it took this woman several months to write that one little paragraph. And, you know, right there is a crisis of confidence. And this woman had been the CEO of three companies.
You'd think you'd just be able to whip that out.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's something within women that, you know, is generations and generations. But the confidence problem plays out in different ways. If you've been fired from a job, you know, that is a debilitating experience. So that strikes your confidence, men or women. If you've been out of the workforce for a number of years, you start to feel like there's no one in the workforce who would really want you or think that you were still valid. And so that's a confidence problem. But really, in all the cases, the best way to build your confidence is to really think about and identify what your skills are and what your accomplishments are. And that's what a lot of men and women don't do. And that's why there are so many people who are pounding the pavement. It's not so much the fact of the economy, because employers have been hiring people all throughout the economic crisis. It's more how you're packaging yourself and how you're branding yourself and talking about your skills. And if you do all that really well, you're going to find a job.
I completely agree. And often I'm counseling people, you know, don't pay attention to the high unemployment rates, because to your point, people are landing jobs. And those people who are more confident, who can present themselves better, tend to do much better at that. How about we'll take a short break, and we'll get back to some more of the Nine Lives. This is Scott Ventrella. We're speaking with Catherine Solman, and we will be right back to continue with the Nine Lives of Women right here at 1490 WGCH.
I'll never forget
that moment.
As long as I live.
My first call ever as a member of the National Guard.
When we got to the armory, they briefed us on the wildfires. They were getting dangerously close to homes.
Helicopters were going out to drop water on the fires.
Guys in the unit were preparing for firefighting with local fire crews.
At that moment, I got my first taste of just how important the Guard is to my community.
See how the Guard can be an important part of your life at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Connecticut National Guard. Aired by the Connecticut Broadcasters Association and this station.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Business of Living, the show that brings you strategies and practical solutions for managing your life and career. I'm your host, Scott Ventrella, speaking with Catherine Solman. She is the founder and managing partner for Nine Lives for Women, a women's initiatives consultancy and multi-channel blog site. By the way, that blog site can be found at www.9lives4women. Focus on 9 distinct stages of life and work. So where are we, Catherine? We are on the fourth life?
Yeah, fourth life is the women who are leaning toward the off-ramp. So these are women who are working, and most times they're enjoying working, but they are working really long hours. There's often a lot of travel. And they're starting to think that it's just not going to work with their families. And they often assume, often prematurely, that there is no answer to finding work-life balance. And so they take off without thoroughly exploring whether they could find some kind of part-time situation or work-at-home situation, and then land up on a hiatus.
Are you finding that companies are becoming a little bit more friendly to women that, again, are on a high-pressure kind of a job, but also want maybe just a little bit more, want a little bit more of that flex time? Is that happening?
Well, I was reading recently that 1 in 4 working women now have some kind of flexibility at work, and that's a huge number. You know, just within the last even 10 years, that's a big change. Flexibility most often is granted after a woman has proven herself. It's infrequent that you can find a very high powered part time job.
So you can't kid yourself on that, really. In my experience, I would agree with that. You can't. If you got a big job, then there are demands and responsibilities that come along with that.
Right. That's why they call it work.
Okay.
But there are many instances where employers are very willing to grant flexibility once they know you, they know your work ethic, and they know what kind of work output that you have. The problem is that most women have a very unconfident conversation with their employers asking if they can have some kind of flexibility instead of treating it as an opportunity to make a pitch like they would make a pitch to a client. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A professional business proposal that talks about all the ways that it's going to work and all the obstacles that may come up and all the ways that you're going to deal with those obstacles when they come up. And I think that if more women really gave a professional proposal like that, that it would be very difficult for an employer to say no.
It can't just be one way where this is what I need and how I'll benefit. It really does have to be that kind of a conversation, and it has to make business sense.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense, by the way. Okay, so what about I'm fast-forwarding a little bit because just yesterday I was having a conversation with a woman whose oldest child is going to be going off to college, and she decided to leave her career, stay at home, raise the kids, and now she's looking at, well, gee, her husband actually has a great job. He's self-employed, and she said, well, you know, he's going to be working for quite a few years. And so she's looking at getting back into the workplace, but now has this big gap, not sure what she wants to get into. Is that one of the 9 lives, or is that, you know, how would you deal with that,
well,
that kind of situation?
That's the life I call itching to get back to work.
I jumped ahead to number 7, didn't I?
But so this woman you were talking to, did she do a lot of volunteering?
She absolutely. In fact, right after we finished our discussion, she said, "I got to run. I've got my volunteer work to do," and she's involved in quite a few things.
Right. So really, the job that she has is to prove to employers that she's continued to develop her business skills while she's been out of the workforce, and she's done that through her volunteer efforts. And women tend to talk about their volunteer work in very light terms. So they'll say on their resumes that they chaired the book fair, for example. And so they have to really get into the nitty-gritty and describe it in the same way that they describe a professional job. You know, they managed, you know, 50 volunteers and 10 committees, and they made, 20% more in revenue than the previous year. And really focus on the skills and the bottom line achievements from each volunteer effort. And when employers see that, then they're not thinking that you were just baking cookies as a volunteer,
right,
that you were really using your business skills. And that's where the confidence comes from. When you can speak that way, when you can walk into a room as what I've always counseled women to say, that they're returning professionals. They're not soccer moms. They're walking into the room as a returning professional, and they have been using their business skills. Then you walk in with a lot more confidence.
Most every woman that I know that has chosen to be a stay-at-home mom are either, you know, involved in a number of different volunteer types of activities, and actually most of those are or many of them are nonprofit types of organizations that that involve, you know, finances and marketing, the branding and selling and organizing and things like that, and also may even have part-time jobs. You know, when the kids are in school and they find, especially as the kids get a little bit older and they're gone for a good part of the day. So I think what you're saying is, don't underestimate what. How that may be translated, again, as they are returning as professionals into the workplace, don't underestimate the value of that.
Right. Yeah. And even before you start to think about, you know, that you're absolutely ready to go back to the workforce, it's a really good idea to be picking and choosing your volunteer posts. So if you're someone who wants to go back to some kind of communications work, then gravitate to all the volunteer jobs
that involve communications.
Right, absolutely. And then you have a natural way to describe what you've been doing and what you want to do.
Well, we've gotten through most of the Nine Lives. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the show. So my question is, okay, Nine Lives for women, what about men? Is there an equivalent? Or do we only get like three or four? Or two? Is that another show?
Well, I mean, I think my impression is that most men, you know, graduate from college and that's a life. And then they sign on to work and that's another life. And then they retire. I mean, there are a few more enlightened men, I think, who say at some point of their career, you know, I'd like to do something different. I'd like to do something more meaningful. You know, for the most part, when a man is deciding about his work, it's really in a tunnel of just what he's interested in, as opposed to women who are thinking about what they're interested in, what it means to their family, whether they're going to still be able to run the household. You know, there's so many things that come into play, and that's why there are nine lives.
Okay, and I once heard at a conference that women are much better. They have the peripheral vision, and they can actually
eyes in the back of their head,
eyes in the back of their head, all the way around. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of my own mom with the seven of us. She knew, and versus my dad, you know, sitting at the, you know, it was either about the food or the newspaper or the news, what was on the news or whatever. Listen, this has been excellent. I wish we had much more time, Catherine. If people wanted to learn more about the Nine Lives for Women and about your organization, where do they go?
www.9livesforwomen.com.
And that's the number nine. Well, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Catherine Solman. Catherine is the founder and managing partner of Nine Lives for Women, a women's initiatives consultancy and multi-channel blog site focused on nine distinct stages of life and work. Thank you for joining me today, this morning. We will see you next week. Remember, you only have one life. Why not live it on purpose? This is Scott Ventrella for the Business of Living Show.
This
so
is
long.
Your community radio station serving Lower Fairfield County and Westchester, 1490 WGCH in Greenwich.
ABC News Now, I'm Joan Bennett. No credible threats, but a warning tied to next week's one-year anniversary of the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. An advisory was issued.